Though wintry weather is causing problems for many in the Middle West and Northeast today, holiday travel is expected to return to pre-9/11 levels this year. According to the AAA, it could even set a record. 63 million people, about a fifth of the U.S. population, is or will be on the road, in the air, or riding the rails to a holiday destination. In many places, that is going to mean more traffic, longer lines, bigger crowds, and more stress, all along with tighter security. But there are experts out there who developed some surefire ideas to deal with holiday travel and return home with sanity intact. We'll hear some ideas for buzz-free clothing to get you through metal detectors and talk about strategies to save time and composure in parking lots. And, of course, we want to hear from the experts out there listening. What is your best tip to survive holiday travel, whether you're headed cross-country or just down to the mall? Call and tell us how you avoid getting stripped, searched, unwrapped, gridlocked, and generally stressed out. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later on in the program, satirist Christopher Moore joins us to talk about the murder of Santa Claus, the zombie attack on Christmas, and his new book, The Stupidest Angel. First, though, holiday travel. And we begin with Arthur Frommer, who joins us now from our bureau in New York. He's editor-in-chief of Arthur Frommer's Budget Travel magazine. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Neil.
So how bad do you think it's going to get over the next couple of days?
It's going to be absolutely terrible. It's the worst time of the year to travel. The traffic this weekend exceeds that that is experienced on July 4th weekend or on Memorial Day or Labor Day. And I frankly don't have any magic solutions to offer. Really, what you just have to do is you have to expect the worst. You have to anticipate all sorts of delays, interruptions, and inconvenience. And if you bring along a good paperback book for the long lines and the long waits, they at least are made tolerable out of that. But it's a perfectly terrible time to travel, starting now and peaking, of course, tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon.
Well, you'd think the fact that Christmas and New Year's fall this year on weekends would give us a bit of a break.
I'm not certain it does. When it happens on a weekday, people tend to finish their travels 2 days before Christmas itself, and Christmas Eve quiets down. Now, because so many people are going to try to spend the entire week working, there will be a lot of people traveling tomorrow and even on Christmas Eve, when in past years the planes have been absolutely empty. Of course, the best day of all to travel will be on Sunday, on Christmas Day itself, where when you enter into a plane, there are four or five people in the entire fuselage. That is the best time to travel, if you can travel exactly on Christmas Day or on New Year's Day, then you'll avoid the crowds. But apart from that, as you pointed out, the traffic levels have reached what was experienced before 9/11. They may even break the records of the year 2000, and of course the entire situation has been exacerbated by the security precautions that are now in effect at airlines all over the country.
And just a slip of the tongue there, Arthur Frommer, of Saturday is Christmas, as I'm sure you know.
Saturday, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Saturday. Obviously, weather is a big concern at this time of the year in general, but I mean, there's been some especially nasty weather in the Middle West.
Indiana has been especially badly hit. The bad weather has extended as far south as to northern Mississippi. If you are still in a position to buy your tickets and you need to make a change at a hub city along the way, you should try to favor the Sun Belt cities. You should try to avoid going into Chicago or Detroit or Milwaukee, Minneapolis, because there is a substantial possibility of further delays, of missed connections and all the rest. Generally speaking, the broad swath of the Sun Belt is the area in which to fly.
Mm-hmm. There are normal accidents that can happen. Today in Richmond, Virginia, the two main runways at the airport there shut down after a plane ran off into the median strip in the middle by mistake, and madness ensues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's get some callers on the line. If you have tips for ways to avoid hassle this holiday travel season, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN at NPR.org. We'll begin with Dan, who's calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hi. You were talking about the idea of buzz-free clothing. I know you haven't really gotten to that topic in detail yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've found, I did a lot more flying this year than I have in a long time, and I find that it's best to avoid wearing jeans onto a plane because the metal rivets, almost every time I've gone through the metal detector, have set it off.
Then you have to sit down and raise your arms and extend your legs and have them spend 10 or 15 minutes going over with you with an electronic wand.
Yeah. It's a fun show for the rest of the passengers, but not a lot of fun for me.
The possibility of this happening to you reinforces the advice to arrive at the airport at least 2 hours before the time of your flight. In many cases, you'll get there that early, and then you'll cool your heels until you're waiting for the plane to leave. But on occasion, you will find that you not only encounter long waits to check in and to just get to the ticket counter, but then after that, going through security, you're singled out to be carefully inspected. And if there is a line of people, you may require 15 minutes to virtually strip, to take off your shoes, to open your briefcase, to extract the laptop computer. It sometimes takes 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes to go through that entire process. So that the advice that all the prudent people give of arriving at the airport no later than 2 hours prior to flight departure is an absolutely valid bit of advice. It's not to be disregarded, and there are cases where if you arrive too close to your departure time, you will undergo a considerable amount of anxiety and worry over missing your flight. You may also check in so late that the whole plane is that if the plane has been overbooked, you will turn out to be the person who was bumped from the flight if you're one of the last people to check in. So 2 hours in advance is the way that you offset a great many of these problems.
Dan, was Fort Wayne one of the places buried by snow this past couple of days?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I'm watching more come down right now.
Well, good luck with it, Dan, and have a happy Christmas.
Hey, same to you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah.
Just today, Arthur Frommer, the Transportation Safety Authority, the TSA, I think issued new regulations on what many women complained were too intimate searches.
Right. And they've used all sorts of euphemisms in describing the new policy that they've adapted. They've said it's all right to go along the perimeter of the breast, whatever that means, and it's all right to pat down a woman, provided you do so with the back of your hand. Apparently, that's less sensitive than the other side. I've also heard that you have the right to demand that they take you to a private room if they do decide to really give you a pat-down. But apparently, the TSA has decided that the cleavage between a woman's breasts are not a good hiding place for explosives, and they will spare people that kind of search.
Now,
they can go all around the breast, but not in the cleavage of the breast.
All of this sounds silly, but these searches became more extensive after the twin explosions on airplanes in Russia, bombs believed to be carried aboard in vests by women.
That's right. Apparently, there were two women from Chechnya who carried belts of explosives of some sort. And, of course, the tragedy of yesterday in Mosul in Iraq probably was caused by a person wearing these new vests that are so form-fitting that they do not appear bulky. On television, we saw pictures of an instruction tape to suicide bombers, showing them the new vest that they can put on that clings so closely to the body that, frankly, you can put a sport shirt over them and no one can tell that you're carrying a vest.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there was a belief that two women boarded these two Russian flights carrying vests of explosives, which they set off in the course of the trip.
Okay, let's see if we can get some more callers involved in the conversation. And let's take a call from Jeff. Jeff's calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, hi, Neil. I love your show.
Thank you. And Dayton, I assume, is also buried under snow.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My tip is what to do, and this was probably rather obvious. I'm not from Dayton. I'm stuck in Dayton. I dropped my girlfriend off at the airport so she could fly to Chicago, and I have dogs, so I was driving the dogs to meet up with her, and I spent the night in a hotel room, and I'm turning around and going home now. And at a 10 miles an hour, I've been driving for 5 hours and have gone about 40 miles.
And how are the dogs taking it?
Actually, quite well. One's a great little traveler, and the other one has become a better traveler.
They're all learning.
Yes, it's been an interesting pre-Christmas. So,
how do you find the demeanor of your fellow drivers with the addition? Of course, you got holiday traffic with snow. Are people going nuts?
You know, it's very strange. It's a certain amount of camaraderie at the hotel that I luckily found last night. This morning, people were bringing their trash cans out of their rooms to help each other dig their cars out of the parking lot. And everyone was helping push the cars out. And, of course, the truckers were very popular people because everyone was going up to the truckers and asking them what they had heard about road conditions or the interstates open. So everyone's really been very friendly. And I felt sorry for the poor Subway guy who worked at the only place anyone could eat at. People have been really nice.
I guess there's a limit to how much teriyaki chicken any one person can eat.
Oh, yes, I've reached it. I love your show.
Thanks,
so,
Jeff.
I'll be listening to the rest of it.
Have a safe trip home.
I will.
Bye-bye. Arthur Frommer, we were talking about the TSA, change in TSA rules. Are there any rules for air or road travel of which we should be aware this year?
Well, when you travel by road, you face markedly higher costs of gasoline. There are all sorts of pundits who've given advice on saving gas, keep reducing the expenses. There are today websites, actually, that you can go to that will tell you which of the gas stations in a particular locality are charging less per gallon. So if you are really penny conscious, you can access this information before you leave and arrange to buy your gas at the lowest possible price. Of course, if you travel slowly when you drive, you will conserve on gas. But I don't know of any other rules to follow that aren't well known to people who are drivers. There's almost an industry of people who provide you with tips and advice for checking in at the airports. They tell you to actually go to the website of the Transportation Security Agency that will tell you what the average weight in line is on particular nights of the week and for particular flights. I don't know what you would do with that information. I don't think you would choose your itineraries or your flights accordingly, but they proffer that advice to you. They even tell you to go to the internet sites of the various individual airlines, where on some of them you can print your boarding pass before you actually go to the airport. And therefore, be assured that you will not be overbooked. You will be given a boarding pass with a seat number on it. And I suppose that's a good tactic for people who are really scared of something untoward happening. I don't follow any of that myself. I follow the one rule that you get to the airport 2 hours in advance. You don't take the kind of chances that we did take prior to 9/11, showing up 10 and 15 minutes in advance of the flight and nevertheless getting on.
We're talking about how to boost levels of comfort and reduce attacks on sanity during holiday travels this year. What are you doing to mitigate the hassles of getting there? When we come back from a break, we'll take more of your calls. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about trying to decrease the hassles and increase the comfort and joy level of holiday travel. Our guest is Arthur Frommer, editor-in-chief of Arthur Frommer's Budget Travel Magazine. If you have ideas that the rest of us might benefit from to make car, rail, bus, or air travel a little bit more bearable, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. As we've been talking about, one of the biggest hassles of flying these days is going through airport security. Sarah Gu has written about airport challenges as aviation security and safety reporter for the Washington Post, and she joins us now from the Post studios here in Washington, D.C. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Neil. Thanks.
And the TSA came out with some news today that it may, as I think we mentioned earlier, alleviate some of the travel problems, at least for women.
That's true. I think Arthur was talking about this earlier. This is a really hot topic now, especially for women travelers. About 15% of all travelers, when they go through the security checkpoint, are called aside for more screening. And the TSA is coming under fire for these pat-down searches that they do on women, particularly around their chest, breast area. And now, after hearing about 400 complaints, they finally decided to change some of those policies to be a little bit more responsive to that. Mm-hmm. So, as you heard earlier,
yes,
no more in between the breasts.
Any other changes or modifications that you know of?
Well, there are changes every day. And I think the number one complaint I always hear from people is the shoe policy. Do I have to take off my shoes or do I not have to take off my shoes? And all these people have gone out and bought these special airport-friendly shoes without metal shanks in them. And then they get to the front of the line and someone is demanding that they take them off. So what I always recommend is just take them off, regardless of whether you think they have metal in them or not, because it will make everything go more smoothly. And a lot of people now, instead of wearing lace-up shoes, wear the ones that just simply slide off. That mm-hmm. tends to work.
At some airports, one of the things that's maddening about this is that there seems to be a different policy at every airport.
That's true. I mean, you think you know the rules, even if you're a frequent traveler, and then you fly and you realize that the rules at Atlanta are different from Dulles. So I think that what would help is just if everybody were a little bit patient, smile, relax. It's going to be long. It'll probably have a long line. And do what they say. I mean, if you have a problem, the TSA has a website you can go to. Check it out. Be familiar with it. And know that if you can lodge a complaint if you have one.
One of the things that you sometimes see in those lines is, I suggest, sir, you take off your shoes. Are you telling me to take them off? No, it's just a suggestion. But there seems to be a veiled threat that if I don't take them off, there will be a long session in a private room with a pat down.
Right. Let me explain this. This is kind of interesting. TSA has what they've told their screeners that there is a certain quote-unquote shoe profile. And I think this means that basically if you have a really thick sole, you're going to be pulled aside if you wear your shoes through. So yes, from the outset, they're going to tell you they think that you do have a choice. You could take them off or not. But if you decide to leave them on and you go through and they happen to be really thick shoes, even if they're like really thick flip-flops, mm-hmm. you're going to be pulled aside and you're going to go through the whole rigmarole where you take off your shoes and you hold your arms out and all that. So
why
don't
they just say, you have to take off your shoes?
I don't know. Maybe they want you to think that you have some kind of choice in the matter.
Okay. Let's get a caller in here. This is Debbie. Debbie's calling from Santa Rosa, California.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
I just wanted to give this tip. As far as women go, they shouldn't be wearing underwire bras. It's really a bad idea. My mother has been traveling frequently between Florida and North Carolina, and she was pretty traumatized by one of the pat-down people, the security people. She had an underwire bra on, and they did not use this woman did not use the back of her hand. She was very rough. My mother was so upset. There was no screen for privacy. She was just mortified. And it was a real bad experience. She has switched the type of bra she wears when she travels now to avoid that. But it's a bad thing. They really don't follow whatever their protocols are in many of these airports.
Go ahead, Sarah.
It's amazing what this has come down to, isn't it? I mean, TSA actually recommends that you do not wear an underwire bra. Well, they say that it could trigger the the metal detector alarm. And I actually, this is funny, I talked to one of the major manufacturers of these underwires who claims that even though they're made of steel, that they do not set them off. But, you know, women will say to me, oh, I traveled last week and I was wearing an underwire bra and it didn't set it off. And another time I did. So what is it? And really, it's an inexact science. Each metal detector is set to a different level. So we don't know. But I mean, for some women, really, this isn't an option. Some women are very large women and they must wear an underwire bra. They don't make bras for everybody without an underwire.
Well, Sarah, you've gone beyond that. You wrote about companies that are now manufacturing clothing, especially designed to help people get through security checkpoints.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of companies that have sprung up on the internet. If you Google them, there's like a company that sells suspenders with plastic clasp instead of metal ones that I talked to a Wisconsin farmer who swore by them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's bras that have, instead of metal, you can get the plastic underwire, under support, if you will. So there are products out there, but, you know, really, you never know what it is. It could be a combination of things that you're wearing. You know, people have piercings that set off the metal detector. So really, before you go to the airport, you really need to think about everything that you're wearing that could possibly alarm it.
Well, thank you very much, and have a happy holiday.
Debbie,
you
thanks
too.
For calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. One more thing, obviously, for the travel season, and is if you're most of us are traveling to go to a Christmas celebration of some sort or another, carrying gifts wrapped, or is the TSA going to make us unwrap them?
Yes,
sometimes.
They will.
Sometimes they do.
Flyers last year heard about that, of course, and it's again this year. I mean, I also suggest that people, you know, you're going to have your luggage search, or there's a good chance you will. Before you go to the airport and pack your things, maybe do your own search, because TSA says they find like a ton of things every year, ammunition, guns, they find knives, and people just kind of forget. They pick the roller bag from under the bed and fill it up and go to the airport. And maybe, you know, we didn't clean it out the last time you flew. So I think that's a good idea, too.
Arthur, did you have more on the presents thing?
On the presents, well, people definitely should avoid wrapping presents before they board the plane. They should leave them unwrapped because the possibilities are very strong that they will then be unwrapped badly by the TSA security official and possibly torn and certainly disarranged.
Mm-hmm.
If you're carrying Christmas presents, you should keep them unwrapped, perhaps even separate from the covering, so that when you get to your destination, you can properly wrap them and put on a nice bow at that point.
Or teach your friends to accept a slightly used paperback novels as a perfectly acceptable Christmas presents. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's get Carl in here. Carl's calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi. I was just calling. We fly a lot, and we normally have very pleasant experiences with TSA, but we put down our lunch carrier by our feet in Brownsville, Texas, which has one gate and one security checkpoint. It's not like there's a lot of things there. And before we knew it, someone had picked up our lunch bucket and put it through, you know, some kind of detection for explosives. And my female partner was proceeded to ask what was going on and had a confrontation with the supervisor, who, when asked for her identification, got really upset and then put my partner's name into a national data bank. So I guess my advice for travelers is to really be nice. Don't ask for anything from them. Provide whatever they want. And don't assert yourself.
That's probably...
Because they can really exercise control beyond what seemed reasonable.
Carl, that's probably generally good advice, but nevertheless, the TSA is also supposed to be responsive to complaints, and a lot of people do want to stand up for what they regard as their rights in these kinds of situations. Arthur Frommer, as an experienced traveler, what do you do?
I give a great deal of leeway to these TSA people. I always keep in my mind the events of September 11, how 19 hijackers succeeded in going aboard planes with box cutters and other instruments in their luggage. I'm happy we have a federal force of inspectors at the airports. Compare them with the level and the caliber of the personnel that we had prior to TSA. And in Congress, all sorts of people fought against the federalization of this function. They wanted to keep this a private matter of people earning minimum wage and accepting this job as a last resort for themselves. I am very happy when they ask me to take off my shoes. I keep in my mind the image of Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, and can remember that just, 3 years ago, a plane flying from Paris to Boston came within minutes of being blown up had he succeeded in turning on the detonating device of his shoes. Mm-hmm. So I don't get angry at their officiousness. I really welcome it. I hope that they'll be more officious. And I, in fact, dislike it when I see them being too casual, that they're becoming bored and blunted by the repetitiveness of the work that they do. It's an awfully good thing that we now have much better trained people at the airports exercising this function than we did have prior to September 11.
Carl, thanks for the call, and better luck next time.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Sarah Gu, we wanted to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Sarah Gu, aviation security and safety reporter for The Washington Post. She joined us from the Post studios here in Washington, D.C. Well, another more local challenge that many of us may face this holiday season is the fight for a parking spot at the mall. Whether it's for last-minute shopping or returning that third tie you got for Christmas, parking can add to your stress level depending on your parking profile. Ray Palermo is director of public relations for Response Insurance. He says that according to a survey they did of drivers, there are four types of mall parkers, and the types vary in terms of stress inducement. Ray joins us now by phone from New York, and thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So what are the four profiles of parkers?
Well, we identified these four broad groups. The first one is the what we call the search and destroy. This is the person who roams up and down the aisle, cruising for that perfect spot to open up.
And if he gets one a five-minute walk away, that's much too far.
Yes. This person has his sights set very high.
Right at the front door.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the next type?
Next one is the lay and wait. This is the person who positions themselves at the end of the aisle, usually backing up traffic, and they kind of stake out their turf. They have their territory in that aisle, and they're waiting to take their opportunity for that spot to open up.
And if they're waiting at a particularly desirable aisle, they may run into problems with the search and destroy types.
It's one of the many problems you're going to see with a number of these strategies, which is you're always in competition with the others.
Hmm. All right, the third type.
The third one is perhaps the most provocative and problematical, and that's the stalker. That's the person who, in their car, follows a shopper back to their car. As they're carrying their bags and fumbling for their keys, they're determined to get that particular parking spot.
Hmm. And again, stalkers can run into problems with both lurkers and search and destroyers.
Well, it's even more complicated than that, because the person walking back to the car may be just dropping off bags and going back in to shop. The person could also be lost, as I often am when I'm returning to my car. I forget which aisle I'm in, and then you're really out in the cold. Or maybe they're just taking a shortcut and going between cars and cutting through aisles.
And the fourth type of parker?
The fourth one is the one that we advise, which is the least stressful way, which is called the see it and take it. You pull into the lot, you find a reasonably placed open spot, and just take it. Don't really think too much about how far it is from the door. And the odds are you're actually going to get to the entrance of the store faster than the other people roaming around.
And you might even burn a calorie or two.
Hopefully.
Now, we're having a bit of fun here, but we all know about road rage. Is there parking lot rage, too?
Actually, there is. And just the other day, our office, Response Insurance, is in Meriden, Connecticut, and in Hartford, which is just up road from us. There was a pretty ugly incident of two drivers coming upon the same parking spot and getting into a huge confrontation. The local police described it as by the end of it, there were just a pile of people, and they all ended up in jail for the night.
So what type of parker are you?
Well, I have to admit, I'm kind of a reformed search and destroyer, and for the past several years, I've been a see it and take it.
Okay. Well, we hope that at least this parking strategy will reduce your holiday stress. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're quite welcome.
And Merry Christmas to you.
You too.
Ray Palermo is Director of Public Relations for Response Insurance and has joined us by telephone from New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller involved in the conversation. This is Skip, who's with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well.
On your last caller?
Yeah.
I am a multi-parker in that I will use all three, search and destroy, stalk, lay and wait, to find that good spot.
I wonder, did you ever live in the city of New York?
No, I did not. I'm in the Sun Belt.
I see. Some very aggressive parkers in the city of New York who also use all those techniques. But
I have driven in New York, and I actually survived fairly well.
Oh, well, that's good. Any other advice for us this year, Scott?
Actually, two things. On flying, you have to be very, very careful of the hand cream you use. I took my girlfriend and her son to the airport a couple of months ago, and I parked the car, came back, and they were having everything torn apart. And I came up kind of cautiously and said, well, what's going on? And they said, well, they found some explosive residue on his bags. And they narrowed it down to a particular hand cream.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Right.
So buzz-free hand cream. That's the next product. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it was Avon.
Well, go ahead.
So the third tip that I have in driving is to get back into the right lane as quickly as possible. I mean, if you're going to pass, fine, get over, but keep getting back into the right lane because that will allow traffic to flow more smoothly. And if you ride in the right lane most of the time, I think you'll find that you actually go faster and get there faster than you do in the left lane.
Arthur Frommer, all kinds of studies showing that whichever lane you're in, is if you just stay there, you'll get there just as fast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Exactly.
Skip, thank you very much, and have a happy holiday.
Have safe travels for everyone. Happy holiday.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can squeeze one more call in. This is Kathy. Kathy's calling from Richmond, Indiana.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I am sitting here on I-70, about 4 miles east of Richmond, Indiana, and I've been sitting here for about a half an hour, and I'm headed to Toledo, and this is not much fun because it took me all morning and all day to get out of my parking lot of my apartment complex where we have 20 inches of snow.
Ooh, it's going to be a long haul, Kathy.
I'm unfortunately afraid so.
Are you re-examining the principles of Zen Buddhism?
Well, actually, I have actually written a couple of Christmas cards and enjoyed watching a couple of my fellow travelers ahead of me let their dogs out and enjoy the snow on the median. And the couple ahead of me, he has a laptop, and I don't know whether they're watching a movie or doing something on the laptop, but we're all just kind of sitting here enjoying sitting.
Well, Kathy, thanks for listening to the radio. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks, and Merry Christmas.
And have a good trip if you can.
Thank you.
And Arthur Frommer, we wanted to thank you for your time today and also for your very welcome advice. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Neil.
Arthur Frommer is editor-in-chief of Arthur Frommer's Budget Travel Magazine, and he joined us from our bureau in New York. If you're flying over the holidays, you might want to think twice about Christopher Moore's new book, The Stupidest Angel. The lady I was next to almost called security because I was laughing so hard. The author joins us after the break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.